This is 91.3 KUAF, a listener-supported service of the J. William Fulbright College of Arts and Sciences at the University of Arkansas. And this is Ozarks at Large for Monday, October 7th, 2019. I'm Kyle Kellums. It's 6 minutes after noon. Thanks for being with us for part of your Monday. Ahead this afternoon, partnership with Native Americans is behind a new campaign to raise awareness about life on reservations in the United States. At this weekend's Native American cultural celebration at the Museum of Native American History in Bentonville, Wes Studi, the actor, helped start the effort. We'll learn more later on today's Ozarks. And after today's Ozarks, on NPR's Here and Now, the latest in the impeachment inquiry. Plus, what's the secret to throwing a great party or a great state dinner? Brian Raffinelli, who's planned parties for presidents, shares some of his secrets. Here and Now, today at 1 on 91.3 KUAF. The next edition of Books and Brews, hosted by the Rogers Public Library, is tonight at 5:30 at Ozark Beer Company on Arkansas Street in Rogers. This month's discussion centers around the book A Season with the Witch, The Magic and Mayhem of Halloween in Salem, Massachusetts, by J.W. Walker. Books and Brews takes place on the first Monday of each month at Ozark Beer Company. You can find out more at rogerspubliclibrary.org. This is Ozarks at Large. A federal judge has ruled against two Benton County companies in a civil lawsuit that involved workers sent to a rehabilitation program. The companies are the Drug and Alcohol Recovery Program and Hendron Plastics, which is owned by Republican State Senator Jim Hendron of Gravette. The workers who were sent to DARP came mostly from Benton and Washington County drug courts. Some came from Oklahoma as well. DARP provided housing, food, and necessities, but no paycheck for the work done at Hendron Plastics, according to Little Rock attorney Tim Stedman, who represents the complainants. Ozarks at Large's Zuzanna Sitek spoke with Stedman about the judge's ruling.
Before we get to the details of the civil suit, can you walk us back a little bit and just explain what the Drug and Alcohol Recovery Program is and how people end up there?
Sure. DARP, Drug and Alcohol Recovery Program, is essentially a work camp. They adamantly say that they don't provide treatment. If you are a participant in a drug court program, you might be ordered to go to DARP to obtain drug recovery services, which consisted of working, going to church, and some NA and AA meetings and some other classes they might offer on site.
So how does Hendron Plastics fit into this DARP program and the drug court system?
Well, DARP, as I said, is essentially a work camp. And what DARP did is they went around to local businesses and essentially offered their participants as a labor source. One of the businesses that used DARP's workers was Hendron Plastics. And Hendron Plastics and DARP entered into a contract where DARP would provide it with people to work and Hendron would pay DARP.
So DARP provided the labor and Hendron Plastics paid DARP for that labor. What do the complainants in this class action suit, which involves around 180 people who went through DARP, what do these complainants want?
The complainants said that they were employees of both Hendron and DARP. They did work. They worked 40 to 48 hours a week, and that they should get paid wages for their labor. And they didn't receive any wages at all while they were there.
So how much do these unpaid wages amount to? What can the complainants expect out of this lawsuit?
Luckily, it's a pretty easy math problem. It's undisputed that the class members worked a little over 76,000 hours for Hendron Plastics at regular hours and about 1,600 overtime hours. We know what the minimum wage rate in effect in Arkansas was at the time the work was performed. You do that math problem. Total, the class is owed around $1.2 million.
U.S. District Judge Tim Brooks sided with the complainants, but what did the defendants have to say about whether or not these people were employees?
And this is why this is an important case. The defendants' argument, in a nutshell, was that the minimum wage laws don't protect these participants. Now, these participants, even though they were required to work at a for-profit manufacturing company building boat floats, that they weren't entitled to any money at all because they were in court.
And the judge issued a summary judgment in this case, so this didn't go before a jury. What are your key takeaways from what he had to say about the ruling?
I think the key takeaways are that individuals who are required to work at a for-profit manufacturing facility are employers. I'm especially thankful that the court recognized the extraordinary benefit that Hendron Plastics received from essentially having a captive labor source that they could utilize to produce their product, which not only was detrimental to the plaintiffs and the class, but it's unfair to Hendron Plastics' other competitors, and it also displaced other people who might be working for a job. The court really recognized that that was a benefit to Hendron Plastics to have used this labor source.
There's a different case in Oklahoma that also has to do with using free labor from a rehabilitation agency. It involves Simmons Industries, which is a major poultry producer in Northwest Arkansas. What does the ruling in the Hendron Plastics case mean for similar cases?
I think it's a very positive sign. Judge Brooks's opinion is very thorough and it's very persuasive. And unfortunately, this situation where participants in drug court programs have been required to work, usually with threats of incarceration if they don't work efficiently, where they're kicked out of programs, if they get hurt working in jobs for private industry and manufacturing plants, this situation has popped up all over the country. And I think that Judge Brooks's opinion is very persuasive that the minimum wage and overtime laws continue to protect these individuals.
Do you think this summary judgment will have any kind of impact on how these programs are run or used?
I mean, I certainly hope so, because there's underlying a lot of this is the complaints we've heard about the conditions at these work camps, what happens when you get hurt on the job, when you're physically unable to perform the jobs that they assign to you, those kinds of things. This whole system seems very unregulated, and I think this is an important first step to stepping in and saying that there are limits. The people in drug courts do have rights, even though they may have addiction problems that have led to other criminal behaviors. They still have rights, and they can't be treated poorly.
And in his judgment, Judge Brooks does question whether these types of programs actually lead to any kind of rehabilitation.
Exactly. And that DARP admitted and, in fact, protested if they were said to have provided any treatment services, because they aren't licensed to provide any treatment. The services that the plaintiffs and other participants were getting at DARP were very, very minimal.
Does something need to be done or addressed on a state level regarding these types of facilities?
I would certainly like to see drug courts maybe take a harder look at where they're sending folks and make sure that they really are providing treatment services, and that the whole treatment, rehabilitation, recovery aspect isn't this idea of work therapy. That if only we can get people in jobs and teach them a work ethic, that will overcome their addiction problem.
Thank you so much for speaking with us and walking us through that.
Thank you, Susanna. I hope you have a good afternoon.
Little Rock attorney Tim Stedman represented complainants in a civil lawsuit against DARP and Hendron Plastics. In a statement to our content partner Talk Business and Politics, Senator Jim Hendren says he will appeal the court's decision, not only because his attorneys have told him it conflicts with the law and other precedents set across the country, but also because he continues to believe rehabilitation and recovery efforts are preferable to filling Arkansas's prisons with nonviolent drug and alcohol offenders. Hendren Plastics ended its arrangement with DARP in October 2017 after lawsuits were filed. Attorney Tim Stedman says he believes the judge's decision will be held up on appeal. Ahead on this Monday, Ozarks, the World Music Ensemble plays two free concerts this week. Nicola Redon, the leader of the ensemble, says the shows will have a mix of the old and the new, all inspired by the Mediterranean.
Mediterranean is such a rich place of these mixed cultures, exchange of the music, not only music, but everything, like a fashion too, and the art as well.
Conversation and music from the World Music Ensemble ahead on this edition of Ozarks at Large. This weekend's Meet the Momentary event in Bentonville introduced thousands of people to the art space that will open in February. It also served as a platform to announce some of the venue's initial celebrations. Time being, February 22nd and 23rd will be the inaugural festival of performance and feature artists and performers from around the world. A bluegrass festival called Fresh Grass Bentonville takes place in April 2020, and it will extend an already existing festival to a new location outside of its September home in Massachusetts for the first time. And next September, there will be a festival titled Vox, dedicated to the human voice. The Momentary officially opens February 22nd. A science fiction film directed by Sean Olson is taking home the Best of Fest 2019 award from this weekend's Fayetteville Film Fest. The movie Max Winslow and the House of Secrets is about five teenagers who battle a supercomputer to win a mansion. The movie had previously been awarded the Best Feature Film at this year's Burbank International Film Festival. It was also awarded this weekend's Audience Choice Award in Fayetteville. And the award for Best Narrative Feature went to Buck Run, about a 15-year-old who has to live with his estranged father after the death of his mother. You can find all the winners from the festival at the Fayetteville Film Fest Facebook page.
Walton Arts Center's 10x10 Art Series presents Nobuntu, Friday, October 11th at 8 p.m. This all-female a cappella quintet from Zimbabwe celebrates their culture and heritage through music, performing traditional Zimbabwean songs, Afro jazz, and gospel. Tickets and more information available at waltonartscenter.org or 443-5600. The University of Arkansas Theater presents Boeing Boeing, running now through October 13th at the University Theater in Fayetteville. This hilarious French farce set in the 1960s follows an American architect as he juggles relationships with three airline stewardesses, 575-4752 or uarkartstickets.com for tickets or more information.
This is Ozarks at Large. A renewed campaign to make more people aware of conditions of Native Americans living in remote and often isolated reservations is underway. Partnership with Native Americans, a nonprofit group that has worked on improving conditions for Native Americans for more than 25 years, showcased the new awareness campaign this weekend at the Museum of Native American History in Bentonville. Robbie Rice Dietrich, the president and CEO of Partnership with Native Americans, says her organization works to educate people about some of the challenges for those living on reservations.
They may not have doctors, hospitals, pharmacies anywhere near them. They may be 90 miles or more away from the closest source of food. And so they struggle because of that. Yet so many people in our country don't know about the situation on the reservation communities.
Robbie Rice Dietrich spoke at a press conference at the Museum of Native American History Friday afternoon as part of the first day of the museum's 2019 Native American Cultural Celebration. She also introduced a series of videos that are hosted by Wes Studi, the actor, that give details about the partnership with Native Americans' work. Studi was also on hand to discuss his collaboration with the group.
I think that the partnership has done some good things in the past and will continue to do good things for people in need. And that in itself is the reason I was excited to have gotten an offer from the partnership to work with them in terms of being sort of the face of PWNA.
A major component of the new campaign is shedding light on some sobering numbers. 23% of Native families experience food insecurity. Only about 13% of Native students have a college degree. That's about half the number of Caucasian Americans. More than half of Native children live in poverty or low-income households, and nearly 30% of employed Native adults live below the poverty level. And one more statistic that is worth noting, less than 1% of this country's charitable giving supports Native causes. That's why a campaign dedicated to awareness is important to West Studi.
What we really want to address, I think, is foundation funding and just general overall giving, which has absolutely dropped since, say, 08 for one. I mean, that's at least a mile marker, wherein donations toward helping Native Americans have dropped extremely.
Having Studi serve as the face and voice of the campaign should aid in bringing attention to the work. He's known for his films like Last of the Mohicans, Avatar, Dances with Wolves, Heat, and A Dog's Way Home. Later this month, Studi, who is of Cherokee descent, will become the first Native American actor to receive an Oscar. The honorary statue will be given in honor of his lifetime's work. After the formal press conference, West Studi told reporters the work he's doing with PWNA is vital.
We are trying to get away from misconceptions, rectify the misconceptions that continue to be spread around the general society about Native Americans. The process of fundraising in order to be able to help those Native American communities that are in need.
Robbie Rice-Dietrich, the president and CEO of Partnership with Native Americans, says there are unique challenges to securing aid for Native populations from donors. Many of the reservations are far from where donors live, and she says there is a prevalent misconception that casino revenue takes care of all the needs of Native families.
But as you saw on that screen, less than 15% had that advantage. There's a misperception that all Native Americans get free housing and free education, and that is absolutely not true. And also, I think so many people, because the communities in which we work, these are tribal lands, so many people have not been there. They are unaware of what's going on. And I find with a lot of the foundations, they give to the same programs to have to do with hunger and helping people produce food and education and safety, that they do it in other countries. Not that other countries don't need that, but they don't realize that these same conditions exist here.
Rice-Dietrich says there are reasons to be encouraged, however. She says Native-led plans for reducing hunger, increasing educational opportunities, and addressing quality of life matters do exist, and she says could be put into action with proper funding. More about the partnership with Native Americans can be found at nativepartnership.org.
What if a black hole came to visit our solar system? I'm Caitlin Ahrens, the Pluto Manager with the U of A Center for Space and Planetary Science, and this is Scratching the Surface. First off, there are two main types of black holes in the universe. The first are supermassive black holes found lurking and churning at the center of galaxies. The other type are interstellar black holes, those that are formed when a large star goes supernova. The closest interstellar black hole is Cygnus X-1, about 6,000 light-years away and only 27 miles in size. So let's say something like Cygnus X-1 comes closer to our neighborhood solar system, starting just beyond the Kuiper Belt. So far, a large number of comets would hurtle towards Earth and the other planets. But it's just a few comets, nothing to worry about. Yet. As the black hole made its way into the solar system, it would actually be invisible to us. It is not until it starts ripping gas from the outer gas giants that a halo of superheated gas and dust would form around the black hole, now presenting us its threat. Even only at 27 miles in size, so several thousand times smaller than Jupiter and Saturn, the black hole mass is still several thousand times greater. From that, we would certainly notice each planet being ripped apart as it's making its way down the planetary buffet line. By the time the black hole reached the asteroid belt between Mars and Jupiter, the intense gravitational pull of the black hole would have torn our planet by now, causing devastating earthquakes and supervolcanoes. Luckily for us, the chances of a black hole making its way to our solar system are 1 in a trillion. For more on the Center for Space and Planetary Science, or for more segments of Scratching the Surface, spacecenter.uark.edu.
Scratching the Surface is a production of KUAF, a listener-supported service of the University of Arkansas.
This is Ozarks at Large. Twice this week, the World Music Ensemble, based at the University of Arkansas, will perform a concert of music inspired by the Mediterranean. The group will be at the Walmart Museum Wednesday night from 6 to 8 for the next Live at the Five and Dime concert. And Thursday night, the World Music Ensemble will present another Honors College House concert in the Honors Student Lounge in Gearhart Hall on the U of A campus. The Thursday night event will begin with a reception at 6, and the music starts at 6:30. Both concerts are free. Last week, members of the ensemble came to the Furman Garner Performance Studio. Going to hear more from that session of flutes, frame drum, oud, santur, bass, shakers, and the Mary Baker Rumsey Steinway piano in just a bit. We asked Nicola Radon, the ensemble's leader, flute player, composer, and music instructor at the University of Arkansas, about the upcoming concerts.
This year, well, we are going to do a mix from old and new, but from the actually area that is exotic from any point of view, if you see, that's the music from Mediterraneans. So Mediterraneans is such a rich place of these mixed cultures, exchange of the music, not only music, but everything, you know, like a fashion too, and the art as well. It was just a perfect place in, from the ancient time and still today, very, very vibrant, colorful, different from each other, very distinct from each other, but yet talking about the same thing, love and passion.
How do you decide what pieces will be part of this show?
Well, it's one of the long, of course, processes, what basically would be the best. There are absolutely, we can't cover the whole night music for what basically is the Mediterranean. It's huge, really. We would need a whole year performances every month to actually explore the different areas. So I choose actually something that basically is the common sense of interest in the Mediterranean. Well, something that we usually know as the Spain, Italy music, I actually use that music too, but I use that in also way to kind of using some of the elements that comes from the Islam or from the actually ancient times of the tribals and, or the pre-Christian era of this. So that's also the music that has a very, very, it's very percussive, if you want, influenced by the Northern Africa.
Well, that makes sense because the Mediterranean has been, for as long as we have been around, this gathering place of shipping and changing and
exchange.
True, yes, and that's what basically when we talk about the Mediterranean, we always think about these places like Italy and Spain, but we don't really, or Greece, but we don't really talk about Lebanon, Palestine, Israel, Egypt. So those are the also Tunisia. So those are the also areas that basically are very powerful. And well, Mediterranean Sea goes also into the Adriatic Sea. So and then Aegean Sea. So you have also from there kind of routes that basically kind of intertwine with the other cultures.
Which is more exciting for you, playing the music or discovering the history of the music?
Discovering the history of music is a long process. And then through the actually discovering not only music but actually the history, the wealth of the tradition, is the process also where I basically I'm growing up, and actually the how I see or envision that music to be played today. I don't necessarily want to repeat them as a kind of original, and that is not our initiative in the World Music Ensemble. We really would love to kind of to make it alive back again,
right,
into the kind of new sounds using some new instruments rather than actually old instruments. So we have that will be something really that is. That we are interested. I'm interested in performing, absolutely. But that process of discovering is bigger to me. Yes. One of the things really is something that I would love to overhear mention, that one of many of these music that we will play are really not playing still today, or they are just being discovered. For example, the music of the Greeks who actually lived in Turkey, not in their own country, Greece, and they were never actually lived. So rhembetica music was a long time forbidden music to be played in Greece.
Oh, wow.
Yes, because it has a lot of call it today the rhembetica is the blue the Greek blues because. Often music has references besides the love and so on, but desperate and the kind of lost in confusion in the new world where they actually find their living. They've been using drugs, heavy opium, hashish. Well, government actually many of these actually players and musicians locked them up in the prisons. Well, actually, these prisoners still continue to write the music and even build a new instrument that today we call it bouzouki.
Oh, wow.
But it was made in a prison during the 1920s and 30s. So, and we're talking about the high intellectuals who were...
political prisoners.
Exactly. They never experienced living in Greece, even though they're originally Greeks. But they are actually, when they came to Greece, they were lost. They were like low class citizens, so they didn't have any kind of rights. So that music is powerful, so powerful that today. We find it back again and interest into using the real text as well to see actually what these people really went through and how they were trying to find a kind of exotic world or some unreal world at that time in the drugs and so. But so there are like a lot of things that have kind of also connected to the politics, migrations. Mm-hmm. Migrations changed music.
Of course. How could they not?
And that's what I like.
Nicola Radon is a music instructor at the University of Arkansas and the leader of the World Music Ensemble based at the U of A. Members of the ensemble came to the Furman Garner Performance Studio last week to play for us. Thank you. Music Ensemble in the Furman Garner Performance Studio last week. The group will play two free concerts this week. Wednesday night at the Walmart Museum in downtown Bentonville. That concert from 6 to 8 is part of the Live at the Five and Dime series. And Thursday night in the Honors Student Lounge in Gerhardt Hall on the U of A campus. That will have a reception that begins at 6. The music Thursday night on the U of A campus begins at 6:30.
Ozarks at Large is underwritten in part by the Walton Family Charitable Support Foundation. Martha Benson and Laura Redford, founders of the Ozark Coverlet Project, documenting historic woven coverlets found in the region's museums and private collections, will discuss their latest discoveries Wednesday, October 16th at noon at the Shiloh Museum of Ozark History. The museum is located at 118 West Johnson Avenue in downtown Springdale. 750-8165 or shilohmuseum.org for more information. SONA, the Symphony of Northwest Arkansas, presents its 65th anniversary season beginning November 9th at Walton Arts Center. The seven-concert season features classical masterworks programs, a Christmas Pops performance, and a special concert for families, all performed by a full orchestra under the baton of Maestro Paul Haas. Tickets and subscriptions available at 443-5600 or sonamusic.org.
It is the 7th day of October 2019, and it's a Monday. So, with me in the Anthony and Susan Hoy News Studio, Becca Martin-Brown, features editor at the Northwest Arkansas Democrat Gazette.
And today is Listen to Becca Try to Pronounce Things. That's the fun for the day.
All right.
Because we have two upcoming events that are super cool, but are going to require a little effort and good luck here. The Walton Art Center is hosting a Zimbabwean quintet called Nobuntu on the 11th, which is Friday. And it's five African women, which I think is just amazing, doing not only legacy music, but sort of modern interpretations of the traditional African music. Our writer talked to a lovely member of Nobuntu named Duduzile Sibanda, who used to be an accountant. And now is traveling the world as a cultural ambassador for the country of her birth.
I love it.
And she said that she was raised, you know, you're supposed to be home cooking and cleaning, but her mother used to say, I hope one day you get a job that lets you travel and look how things turned out. So this will be a great experience, and it will shake the roof of the Walton Arts Center.
And this is part of the 10 by 10.
This is part of the 10 by 10. So it's
a $10 ticket.
Starts at 8 o'clock on Friday at Walton Arts Center, and tickets are $10. Yeah, how can you miss this? And then, on Saturday night, if you love Harry Potter.
Oh, yeah. Right.
If you love orchestral music, if you love the score by the infamous or famous John Williams.
I think we'd go with famous, right?
Okay. At the Arkansas Music Pavilion, Harry Potter and the Prisoner of Azkaban. Live, this is one of the cine concerts with a full orchestra playing the score. And there's also some vocalists.
Okay.
And I'm not real sure about that.
Because?
Well, I don't know which parts they're, I don't know what parts they're going to do, but there are musicians from the Bentonville High School Chamber Singers involved.
I'm unfamiliar. I've not seen this movie. No, don't give me that look. I haven't seen this movie, but maybe in the movie there are some choral parts or something?
I can't remember the movie because I've seen it more than 10 minutes ago.
Okay. But so that could be it.
But if you love Harry Potter...
Because doesn't it have sort of a gothic feel? Aren't they in castle sometimes?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
They're in a castle all the time.
Well, there you
go. It's the school.
Hogwarts, right?
Excellent.
There you go. I'm a muggle, am I not?
Oh, yeah, you
See?
Are a muggle.
Okay.
Sometimes I worry about him. Then again, sometimes I worry about me, so it's okay. 7 o'clock on Saturday at the Arkansas Music Pavilion in Rogers. Tickets start at $22. Also, on Thursday the 10th, and I don't have the information in front of me, but I'm going to fake it anyway, Trout Fishing in America is playing at the AAC Live Concert Series in Fort Smith.
Oh, that's right, and... Check for ticket availability.
Don't ever show up there because it's a tiny little listening room. But if you've never heard Trout where you could actually hear them.
Yeah.
This is a beautiful listening room, and you can find out more at AAC Live.
And you know what? If it is sold out and you're too late for this one, find out who else is going to be
there. Oh, yeah, because they have a great lineup this year. And then also on Thursday, it's the UA Press Author Showcase at the Fayetteville Public Library at 6 o'clock. Ben Johnson,
right,
the author of Arkansas and Modern America Since 1930.
Right.
That's free. On Friday, it's the silver anniversary of the Ozark Poets and Writers Collective.
Yeah.
And Lisa Martinovic is back from San Francisco.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. And other people that you know will be reading and poeting and doing things to celebrate 25 years. That happens at 7 o'clock at the new Graduate Hotel in downtown Fayetteville, the Hilton.
Okay. It's been about five things since then,
yeah,
but
I know.
Okay.
But some people can only remember the
sure.
one that was their contemporaneous. So.
Sure.
It's the new grad. Now it has plaid.
And I love the plaid.
It's plaid.
I love it. You can see it all
for
over.
For miles.
Yes.
This is free. You can find out more on Facebook at Ozark Writers. The Northwest Arkansas Ballet Theater is doing two world premieres.
Mm-hmm. And this is, okay, go ahead.
And this is at Theater Square.
Yes.
At 8 o'clock on the 11th and 12th, this is going to be in their new home, apparently, and they get the big auditorium.
This is wonderful. This is that Theater Squared has this ability.
And Theater Squared has moved their show, Native Gardens, into the little
right.
auditorium because they wanted to take you into the backyards
yeah.
of these characters. But Immortal Beloved is at 8 on the 11th and 12th, and tickets start at $23. On Friday, one night only, the movie version of the Rocky Horror Picture Show
mm-hmm.
on the screen at Arkansas Public Theater in Rogers at 8 o'clock with a bunch of the actors from the recent stage production hamming it up with
playing
you.
Along and right.
Tickets for that start at $18. And then on Saturday, it's the one, the only, it happens every year, and I forget how many years this is, Pea Ridge Mule Jump.
Oh, yeah. Have you ever gone?
No.
I have. It's
interesting.
Yeah.
Who knew that a mule, basically from a dead stop...
Well, that's the rule.
...can just leap.
And you have to coax it over basically with your voice. You can't pull the reins
yeah.
or anything like that. You've got to convince it. You know, it's like getting a cat to come to you.
And this is why so many people, even still, ride mules for work. Because they can do things horses can't. And they're lots less fragile.
And the last time I went, they had a Brahma bull that jumped.
Really?
Yep.
It thought it was a mule.
I don't know what it thought it was, but it would jump.
Super cool. So that's like $5, and you'll never have seen anything like it.
And it's the world championship.
It is.
All right.
And then there's also a walk and talk downtown Fayetteville art at 9 o'clock Saturday, starting from the Fayetteville Public Library. That's free, but you need to register at faylib.org. And a family concert from 1 to 4 in the afternoon at the Rogers Historical Museum with a band that I've just started hearing the name of, the Suede Diablos.
Yes. Do you know more?
All I know is that it's fronted by Mark Shields, who's a teacher at the Arkansas Arts Academy.
Right.
And this event is free.
And I want to add that on Saturday night, Taste of Mount Sequoia happening at Mount Sequoia as well. So.
Do you know how much tickets are for that?
They range from, depending on what you do, because there's a general ticket, there's taste the food only, all sorts of things, and they're different levels, but from $40 to $60.
And those, if you've never done a taste of,
they're
yeah, awesome.
And it's on Mount Sequoia.
And beautiful this time of year. So that ought to hold you for a day or two. It doesn't get any less busy, so I'll be back.
Becca Martin Brown, features editor at the Northwest Arkansas Democrat Gazette. So one of the busiest weekends of the year is over, but there is plenty happening the rest of this month, too. The Unexpected in Fort Smith is underway. Artists, musicians, and speakers are converging in Fort Smith through the 12th. Among the highlights, Amos Cochran will present his show Memory Dissolve at Bastion Gallery on Garrison Avenue. A complete schedule of events and listing of artists creating work can be found at unexpectedfs.com. The writers calling it Derry Hollow in Eureka Springs will have an evening of Chinese poetry Thursday night beginning at 7. The event is part of the U.S.-China Poetry Dialogue and will include a discussion about the state of poetry, literature, and art in the U.S. and China, as well as the role of the arts in cross-cultural understanding. No charge to attend, but donations would be appreciated. Reservations are not required. If you need to know more, writerscolony.org. Fort Smith Museum of History will host the opening reception for The ArcBest Story, A Century of Innovation. That exhibition's opening is Thursday night beginning at 6. The exhibit will showcase the history of ArcBest. The company remains headquartered in Fort Smith. The ArcBest Story, A Century of Innovation, hosted in the Boyd Gallery through late summer of 2020. And the Ozark Poets and Writers Collective will celebrate 25 years of poetry and prose Friday night at the Graduate in downtown Fayetteville. Over 20 writers will perform their work, featuring Lisa Martinovic, Slam Queen of the Ozarks. For more, Ozark Poets and Writers Collective on Facebook. And tomorrow on Ozarks at Large, climate change and architecture.
We're learning about what kind of architecture this material can produce. And it's a time in the history of our species that is so incredibly important. And architects have such a major role to play in this.
London-based architect Andrew Waugh was in Fayetteville this weekend to speak at the University of Arkansas. Before he left town yesterday afternoon, he came to the Carver Center for Public Radio to discuss sustainable ways to build multi-story structures and why he says it's time to move away from concrete and steel. Our conversation on tomorrow's Ozarks at Large at noon and 7 p.m. on 91.3 KUAF.
From Little Rock, I'm Stephen Cook with Ark and Songs.
Baby, I can't let you go. Baby, oh, no.
Songwriter Rose Marie McCoy was born April 19, 1922, in Oneida in Phillips County, Arkansas, where her parents farmed. She attended Eliza Miller High School in nearby Helena, where she lived with her grandparents. By the way, the Eliza Miller High School was begun by the businesswoman and educator Eliza Miller, who is an Arkadelphia native. Opening in 1926, it was the first high school for black students in Phillips County. Living in Helena, home to so many performers, Rose Marie McCoy learned to love the blues herself.
Here come old evil chick, always telling everybody she come from Chicago. Got Mississippi written all over.
You better stop trying to run my business.
Look who's got business.
Oh, I'll have to do what I hate to do.
Go ahead and do it. Ain't nobody scared of you.
Better stop trying to run my business.
Somebody need to run it before they run you out of town.
Oh, I'll have to do what I hate to do.
Nothing you can do. Never could do nothing.
By the time she was out of her teens, Rose Marie McCoy had moved to New York City to make it as a singer. She opened up for the likes of comedians Pigmeat Markham and Moms Mabley. The gospel vocal quartet The Dixie Airs recorded a McCoy song in 1946, but it was the early 1950s before Rose Marie McCoy saw her first top five R&B hit, Gabin Blues by Big Maybelle Heard Here, which reached number 3 in 1953. Songwriting and not singing would prove to be Rose Marie McCoy's greatest gift.
When I was born, you were suffering from old age arthritis and lost of memory.
You know you.
Oh, Miss Know-All. You don't know nothing.
Yes, and I even know when you were born.
In school, she was so thick-headed, they put her out. She's taking up too much space.
From there, Rose Marie McCoy wrote songs recorded by Big Joe Turner, Ruth Brown, Nat King Cole, Sarah Vaughan, The Drifters, and such fellow Arkansas artists as Al Hibbler, Louis Jordan, and Little Willie John. McCoy wrote several songs with Willie John's producer, Hot Springs native Henry Glover. This includes Willie John's Uh-Uh Baby, which opened up this episode of Arkansas Songs, and If I Thought You Needed Me, heard next, and also by Little Willie John.
If I thought you needed me,
Elvis Elvis Presley's version of the Rosemary McCoy song Trying to Get to You was released on Presley's 1956 debut album. It was subsequently recorded by Roy Orbison, Ricky Nelson, and later by Eric Burdon, Johnny Rivers, and Faith Hill, among others. Thank God for Elvis, McCoy would later say, although she wasn't a big fan of his version. In 1958, Presley recorded McCoy's song I Beg of You, which hit the top 10 as the B-side of his song Don't.
Train. I was standing at the railroad crossing, soaking wet with rain. Now I realize fortune and fame is not for me. And all these pretty stories ain't what they cooked up to be.
Brinkley native and R&B pioneer Louis Jordan recorded McCoy's If I Had Any Sense, I'd Go Back Home in the mid-1950s when his career was faltering. And while the song may have seemed autobiographical to Jordan, Rosemary McCoy was having the same self-doubt when she wrote it.
Yeah, my mother stood crying. My father had an aching heart. He said, son, son, please don't let us part. But I didn't have the willpower to stop. I had to do what I had to do.
But the Arkansaser needn't have worried about her musical legacy. Ike and Tina Turner's 1961 version of McCoy's song It's Gonna Work Out Fine was nominated for a Grammy. And McCoy continued to have hit songs through the genres and through the decades, primarily in R&B, but also in jazz, rock, gospel, and even country music. McCoy was inducted into the Arkansas Black Hall of Fame in 2008. Arlene Corsano of New Jersey wrote a biography of McCoy called Thought We Were Writing the Blues, But They Called It Rock and Roll, which was published in 2014. A giant in songwriting across the genres, Arkansaser Rosemary McCoy died in January 2015 at the age of 92. Written by Oneida, Arkansas native Rosemary McCoy, here in its entirety is If I Had Any Sense, I'd Go Back Home, from the 1991 original London cast recording of Five Guys Named Mo, featuring the songs of Brinkley native Louis Jordan.
I've been thinking, but I keep drinking, and I'm just about to lose my mind.
I remember the day I caught the train. I was standing at the railway crossing, something wet with rain. Fortune and fame is not for me, and all those pretty stories ain't what they're cooked up to be. Every move I made was wrong. If I had any sense, I'd go back home. My father had an aching heart. He said, son, oh, son, please don't let us part. My sweetheart was crying. I cried a little bit too, but I didn't have the will to stop. Had to do what I had to do. Every move I made was wrong. If I had any sense, I'd go back home. My baby wrote me a letter saying, come back to my side. But I can't go back now because I've got too much pride. I'm having so much trouble. I don't know what to do. But nothing but my mother and father's friends to see me through. I stayed away too long. If I had any sense, I'd go back home.
If I had any sense, I'd go back home, from the 1991 original London cast recording of the musical Five Guys Named Mo, and written by Phillips County, Arkansas native Rosemary McCoy. It's another song of Arkansas. From Little Rock, I'm Stephen Cook with Arkansongs.
Arkansongs is underwritten by Helena's King Biscuit Blues Festival, October 9th through 12th, with headliners Delbert McClinton, Kenny Wayne Shepherd, and Ruthie Foster. KingBiscuitFestival.com.
The number two Arkansas Razorback women's cross-country team, keeping the Chili Pepper Trophy in Fayetteville. Arkansas placed four runners in the top five at Saturday's race at Agri Park. Taylor Werner placed first in the race as Arkansas was far ahead of runner-up Texas. The number 25 men's team finished fifth at the Chili Pepper. Texas won the men's race. Arkansas swimming and diving off to a solid start to the season after sweeping Arkansas Little Rock Saturday in Fayetteville. The Razorbacks won all 16 events. The Razorbacks now prepare for a meeting with top-ranked Stanford in Palo Alto, California on Saturday. Arkansas volleyball team still looking for a first conference win in 2019. They lost in straight sets to A&M Friday night in Barnhill Arena. Arkansas's next shot at an SEC win is Friday night at home against Florida. The John Brown University volleyball team won a pair of road matches this weekend. They're now 15-3. They'll continue to play away from home until October 25th. The University of Arkansas Fort Smith volleyball team also went 2-0 on the road this weekend. Team now 12-3. They're back in the Stubblefield Center tomorrow night for a 6 p.m. match against Oklahoma Baptist. And the JBU women's soccer team back in Siloam Springs this weekend, hosting Oklahoma City Saturday evening at 5. They won their lone match this weekend, now 7-2-1. The JBU men 8-2 after a win this weekend. They'll be back home Saturday evening as well.
NWA Ballet Theater presents Immortal Beloved, Possessed by Genius. Friday and Saturday, October 11th and 12th at 8 p.m. at Theater Squared in Fayetteville. Depicting the story of Beethoven's genius, turmoil, and muses through a moving portrait of dance, this production includes work by international choreographer Stephanie Martinez and roster of 24 artists. NWAballet.com for tickets and information. Walton Arts Center presents The Complete Works of William Shakespeare, Abridged, Thursday, October 17th at 7 p.m. Three men in tights use wacky antics to take on the seemingly impossible task of performing each of Shakespeare's 37 plays in just 97 minutes. Tickets and more information available at waltonartscenter.org or 443-5600.
Contributors to our program today included Zuzanna Sitek. Timothy Dennis mastered our show. Scratching the Surface, written and hosted by Kate and Lynn Ahrens, produced by Pete Hartman in the Nancy Blair Operations Studio. Stephen Cook is the host of Arkansongs. You can learn more at the Arkansongs Facebook page. This is 91.3 KUAF, Fayetteville, Fort Smith, Bentonville, and Alma. I'm Kyle Kellums. We're back tomorrow at noon and 7 with another Ozarks at Large.